Welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom, and with me is a man who is stranger than a knitted crash helmet or a ceramic baseball bat. It can only be Silent Dave Hutchinson. How's it hanging? Actually, let's skip the greeting before we get the details. I've just got my voice back after Sunday. What a Sunday it was! My voice has been helped by sucking on a fisherman's friend. Oh, I knew that was coming. Dave is currently in chuckle mode. Grow up, sir. News coming out of Liverpool. James Milner celebrated his 75th birthday this week. The veteran midfielder sadly dislocated his jaw blowing out candles and lost the lower set of dentures, but he's said to be comfortable and well in a self-tilting armchair at the Ron Yates Infirmary. So Liverpool were the next challenge to Arsenal's credentials in the Premier League, managed by Jurgen Klopp, a man with so many teeth his jaws don't know what to do with them. The romance that once seemed so solid and unbreakable now seems just a distant memory. I am, of course, talking about the steamy relationship between VAR and Liverpool. It's enough to make you grind your veneers. Connor brings us every morsel from the clash between Arsenal and the Merseyside Cloppers from the Emirates in Gonna Get Into It. He also rounds up all the action from the Europa League against Bodo Glimt. I'm back in the gun room with the Podcasters to discuss those performances and cherry pick the highs and lows. Who was hot and who was not? Find out later as we throw open the gun room doors. Lauren covers the latest in the WSL, including accusations of abuse and misconduct. What else have we got? We discuss football food from the best of the best to the burnt and the anemic. Who turfs out value for money and who needs to close the kitchen?
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Right then, a disgruntled Man United fan has started, you won't be surprised, has started a petition to get Erling Haaland banned from association football because he claims it's not fair. The organiser has also explained why he set the petition up, branding Haaland a robot. The description of the petition reads, "It's just simply not fair. We can make a change. Now is the time for us people to act. The robot should not be allowed to carry on in this country." The robot, by the way, is currently on just £900,000 a week, just under. He makes £375,000 per week as a base pay. His contract includes a number of almost guaranteed bonuses, taking his wage up to those eye-watering levels. Ka-ching!
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, 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 Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Whatever happened to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain? Used to play for Arsenal and he would always bang them in. Now he only plays for Liverpool when there's an injury. Come to think of it, that is pretty ironic. He came through at Southampton as a kid, went to Arsenal just like Theo Walcott did. I just checked his Wikipedia, he's still only 26. Wait, I might be getting confused with Kieran Gibbs. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, 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 Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He comes from a football family. His dad played for England and for Stoke City. His uncle played his younger brother. number two. I didn't know the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were so good at football.
Cowabunga!
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. 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 Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
He's often injured and watches from the stands, celebrating titles with his crutches in his hands. So he fills his time with pranks and jokes, like stealing teammates' phones and wearing f***ing massive coats. What new career would do for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain? Interview his teammates after they have played a game. Maybe he could take up basketball instead, become Walter White and make some world-class crystal meth. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. 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 Oh yeah.
Right, let's go to Connor with his report and gonna get into it.
Mikel Arteta's men made it 2 wins from 2 in Group A of this season's Europa League group stage round, with a largely comfortable 3-0 home win over Norwegian side Bodø/Glimt at the Emirates Stadium last Thursday night. Eddie Nketiah grabbed his second of the competition, and Rob Holding scored his first goal of the season, before Fabio Vieira scored his first goal at the Emirates Stadium to seal the win in the closing stages after more Gabriel Jesus magic. Nketiah's strike means that the young English striker has now netted in 4 consecutive Europa League games. Having made 8 changes from the side that claimed the Derby Day spoils on the Saturday before, our much-changed starting 11 got off to a relatively slow start before creating 2 clear-cut opportunities after the 10-minute mark. Firstly, Nketiah's impressive solo run to the edge of the opposition box resulted in the English striker bending an effort just wide. Moments later, Vieira brought the ball down on his chest beautifully before volleying onto the top of the crossbar. It would have been an absolute worldie. Shortly afterwards, though, we did have our deserved lead. In the 23rd minute, Gabriel Martinelli drove forward on one of his typical runs down the left-hand side before finding Kieran Tierney. The Scotsman then thumped a powerful left-footed strike off the post. Nketiah was the quickest to react, right place, right time, to divert the rebound first time into the back of the net. We had our second 4 minutes later. Fabio Vieira saw a corner cleared straight back into his path, and the Portuguese wizard produced a wonderful cross that was begging to be dispatched into the net. And Rob Holding was on hand to do just that, to double our advantage. There were further chances to virtually put the game to bed before half-time, with Granit Xhaka seeing a powerful free kick pushed over the top by Huijsen. And then the skipper on the night cut the ball back for Vieira, who marginally misplaced his shot wide. We found chances harder to come by in the second 45, as the Norwegian visitors slowly grew back into the contest. The returning Reece Nelson came on midway through the second period to make his first appearance for the club since August of 2021. We then wrapped up the game in style with 6 minutes remaining. Substitute Gabriel Jesus collected the ball on the left touchline and danced past 3 defenders before putting the ball on a plate for Vieira to fire home from close range. Comfortable win. We face a Norwegian outfit away from home this Thursday in our 3rd game of Group A. It finished at the Emirates. Arsenal 3, Bodø/Glimt 0.
Arsenal fans, remember Robbie Savage? Of course you do. You've got long memories, haven't you? Hey, get your booze out. Polish your booze up. Kick them high, kick them low, kick them everywhere. That Robbie Savage. Apparently, he's a columnist in the Mirror. They must be desperate. He's been talking up Arsenal's chances in the Premier League. So that's us finished then. The kiss of death from one of the most despised footballers ever to draw a breath. That's put the lid on it. And where is the great Robbie now? Macclesfield, and he wouldn't even get in that side if I had my way. But seriously, if you ever saw the BBC documentary, there it was about Macclesfield. The club went into administration. The ground was up for sale. His millionaire friend bought the club and just rebranded it and built it back up again and made the stadium viable. And it's an interesting football story. The romance of football is all back and alive and well in this particular documentary. Right, let's go over to Connor for his second match report in Gonna Get Into It. Arsenal versus Liverpool. What a match it turned out to be.
What a win. What a week. Two mightily impressive wins. Two sensational performances. Two back-to-back wins in the Premier League against Spurs and Liverpool, respectively, at the Emirates. Certainly has people talking up our title chances. City are still a point behind us, and they play Liverpool this weekend coming, while we have Leeds United away from home, which is a very winnable game. Team news then. Arsenal made one change from their win over Tottenham Hotspur last weekend, with Takahiro Tomiyasu coming in for the injured Alexander Zinchenko at left-back. Liverpool named the same starting 11, which beat Rangers in the Champions League in midweek, with Darwin Nunez, Luis Diaz and Diogo Jota in attack alongside Mohamed Salah. Arsenal had lost 6 of their last 7 Premier League games with Liverpool, but there really was a feeling before kick-off it could be very different this time out, wasn't there? 58 seconds exactly on the clock, and we had the lead to send the fans into ecstatic mode. Not for the first time this season, Liverpool's habit of starting matches slowly was exposed. Ben White found Saka hugging the right-hand touchline. Saka's brilliant infield pass between the lines allowed Odegaard the time and space needed to produce a sensational eye-of-the-needle through ball for Gabriel Martinelli to latch onto and curl beautifully past Alisson first time. Trent Alexander-Arnold was caught napping. Odegaard too clever. Martinelli too quick. Excellent finish by the Brazilian, who looked like a Thierry Henry in his prime, slotting that ball past the Liverpool goalkeeper. And would you believe it, it was the 10th time in their last 12 Premier League games that Liverpool had conceded the first goal. 1-0 to the Arsenal, 1 minute on the clock. It couldn't have been better in the opening stages. And what about this? A stat and a half. Another goal fest between Arsenal and Liverpool. There have been 180 goals scored in Premier League meetings between Arsenal and Liverpool, the most of any fixture in Premier League history. Unbelievable stuff. Well, after the early setback, Klopp's side are not to be underestimated by any stretch of the imagination, and they slowly but surely made their way back into the contest that had a real top-of-the-table clash feeling to it. Nunez, who was starting to cause Gabriel and Saliba plenty of problems as the first half wore on, got the goal his play had deserved just after the half-hour mark, when a long ball over the top from Trent Alexander-Arnold was miscued by Gabriel, and Luis Diaz benefited, racing across to the right-hand side to cross for Nunez to slide past Ramsdale for the equaliser. Another defensive error by Gabriel in a big game, and the Brazilian is now clearly the weak link, if he had to choose one, of this current Arsenal side. 34 minutes played, Arsenal 1, Liverpool 1. And then, in first half stoppage time, against the run of play, we had our second. The ball fell kindly to Gabriel Jesus just before the centre circle, after a Liverpool corner was cleared. Jesus then found Martinelli on the left-hand side, who galloped toward goal. Taking on Henderson on the left-hand side of the box, the man of the match then cut back brilliantly before sending a dangerous low cross across the face of the Liverpool goal. Gabriel had made a run into the box and he expertly dummied it for Saka to slide home on the stretch. Beautiful play by Gabriel. Sensational awareness by the Brazilian, who atoned for his earlier error. But what about that for counter-attacking football? 2-1 to the Arsenal at the break. Cracking first half, cracking game. And then we came firing out of the blocks at the start of the second period as Martinelli set up Odegaard, who scuffed his effort when well placed. This time, though, it was the visitors who scored against the run of play moments later. Diogo Jota sliding a lovely pass through for substitute Firmino, who finished brilliantly across Ramsdale and inside the far post to score his 10th goal against the Gunners. Arsenal, though, maintained the momentum, and Alisson was forced into a double save from Saka and Jesus before the game-defining moment. Jesus got to the ball ahead of Thiago as they both swung for a loose ball in the box following a corner. Penalty given with 75 minutes on the clock. Soft one. Yes, but there certainly was contact. For me, it was a penalty. My unbiased opinion, of course, as a die-hard Arsenal fan. Well, Bukayo Saka showed nerves of absolute steel to beat Alisson for a second time in the match for the eventual match winner. What a game. We absolutely dominated Liverpool in the second half, and I had to laugh after the game. Jurgen Klopp, in his press conference after the game, said that he felt as though a draw was a fair result. Liverpool did shade the end of that first half, but it was a really comprehensive second half performance. Next up, of course, Bodo Glimt on Thursday night in Norway before we travel to Elland Road on Sunday for a 2 p.m. kickoff away to Leeds United. We're still 1 point clear at the top of the table. 8 wins from 9. It finished on Sunday. Arsenal 3, Liverpool 2.
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gun room. It's all go again, isn't it, eh? Nothing like the smell of another victory, is there? With me tonight, the Pocketeers, are Nick, codename Ben Affleck from the Arsenal Brothers podcast.
Hi, Tom. Hey,
there's great. You there. We've got Lauren in sunny Barcelona, one in America, one in Barcelona.
Hi.
How are you?
Great, thank you.
And Paul on Merseyside. He's the right end of Merseyside. How are you, Paul?
For your results, very happy for my result, not so.
Well, you're on 10 points each in the Premier League, aren't you? So
but we could have gone above them.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a busy week. We've had Bodo Glimt, and we've got Leeds coming up. So we've got the round two of that. We'll do the side first. Aaron Ramsdale in goal, Ben White, William Saliba, Gabriel, Tomiyasu. That was a bit of a surprise. Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka, Bukayo Saka, Martin Odegaard, and Gabriel Martinelli, and Gabriel Jesus. So, Tomiyasu in, Nick. I was nearly going to call you Ben there because of Ben Affleck reference from Silent Dave. I shan't do that. I'll try and calm down with that. Were you thinking that was a good decision? I thought it was a brilliant sort of master plan just to bring him into that side, just to shore it up a little bit. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was a master stroke. I just really love watching him defend. And I think he's one of the, if not the best defender in the league. I'll go out on a limb and say that. I mean, somebody his size, moving like he does, as good on the ball. Yeah, that might be a hot take, but he's incredible. And I've been itching to see him find a way back in the team. And I knew once he got his chance, I was just excited to see him do that. And, you know, when you really think about it, Arteta's done this before with Maitland-Niles at left back, a right-footed player to defend a left-footed player, the left-footed player cutting in, right-footed player going on their strong foot coming in. So I thought it was really hard on Tierney because he played so good at the weekend. But I think this says a lot about Tomiyasu. And now we have a back line that's all comfortably over 6 foot, and we could bully them a little bit if we needed. So, yeah, I was all for it.
Paul, as our resident scouser, our Merseysider from the right half, what did you think of the performance?
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. I mean, just go back to what Nick was saying there as well, and what you said yourself there. I thought Tomiyasu was absolutely superb. And I thought it made a refreshing change to see a fullback who can actually defend as opposed to the modern turn of the wingbacks, because him staying back cuts out the threat from Salah entirely. And I've seen some stats today that apparently Salah only had one touch in Arsenal's box, which is kind of testament to what a sound defence job Tomiyasu did. Yeah, I mean, as we said before the podcast started, I thought the Arsenal performance was excellent from start to finish. I think we said in the pod last week that Arsenal's tactics would probably be to hit Liverpool from the start. Didn't quite think they were going to hit them that quickly, but it was a superb start. And as you said from your reactions to the goal, it just lifted the whole crowd and set the scene for moving on and getting the win. Now, I did think in the first half, there were times when Liverpool were having a bit too much possession, but started to dominate the game a little bit, decreased a few chances. But breaking away and scored that goal just before half-time, I think, brought the self-belief back to Arsenal. And I think, whether you know this or not, it was the first time in 605 minutes that Arsenal scored against Liverpool. They haven't scored against Liverpool for six games. So it was some feat to score after five minutes in that match as well. Yeah, and it's the resilience, isn't it? You know, you pull back twice. And I think you probably know best me. Previous Arsenal side, the heads might have gone down a bit here and think, oh God, we're going to lose it. But they held on. And whether it was a clear penalty, it doesn't matter. You know, Liverpool have earned enough penalties through Salah's diving in the past. So they're in no position to object to what happens to them. So, yeah, to hang on to three to win. And Saka, his calmness, I think he waited 3 minutes from the penalty being given to taking it. Such calmness, such aplomb which he took the penalty, and a thoroughly deserved victory.
I was a bit like that, I must admit, when he stepped up for that penalty, especially with all the England history and all that sort of thing. Yeah. He's such a courageous lad. Lauren, who impressed you in the Arsenal side? We'll go through it in great detail with the penalties and the arguments and everything else. But who was standing out for you when we started kicking off? I mean, we mentioned Martinelli in the last pod and Saka. Mm-hmm. And they lived up to the billing, didn't they?
100%. And I think this was a game where, you know, when we play against, without being disrespectful, teams who aren't Liverpool. So, you know, we've faced Fulham, for example, and they were really, really good in defence in blocking threats from Martinelli and Saka. We came up against Liverpool, who are a bit more attacking, and it just showed just how good those two players are when they're given a bit of space. I mean, both of them were unplayable. And I thought Martinelli was going to be the key. I think he probably was. I think he got man of the match, well deserved. So I think, you know, credit where credit's due. He's probably the first name we have to mention. Goal in the first minute. He was exceptional. His pass for the second goal as well. Fantastic. Saka, 100%. But I think, you know, Tomiyasu, another name to mention, who did a great job. Xhaka as well. I thought he did phenomenal in midfield. I thought we completely bullied them there. We controlled the game and it was just a joy to watch, really. I mean, it was a bit nervy at times, of course. You know, the history with Liverpool.
It's an Arsenal thing.
Exactly. But no, it was thoroughly enjoyable. And it's kind of hard to single out certain people because I think, you know, it was such a great team performance. But if we have to, I would have to say, you know, Martinelli.
Yeah, he was absolutely epic. He just seems to be improving by the game, getting stronger. Physically, mentally, and more aggressive. Nick, let's deal with that goal. Early goal with Saka on the right to Odegaard. He's taken some stick on social media, which I cannot fathom. He puts a world-class defence-splitting pass, inch-perfect, into the path of Martinelli. When you've got someone like that, it's irresistible, isn't it? Because he knows there's going to be someone running now in this team ahead of him to feed. It was an amazing goal. What did you make of it?
It was, and so early. It was. It reminded me of the United game at home last year where Nuno Tavares scored, I think, in the third minute, and just such an early goal and such a big game. Really, really gets the place rocking, and it was just such a free-flowing move, and it was a great finish because Alisson was coming out. I was, how is he going to get this around underneath him, whatever, and he found a way, and an incredible ball from Odegaard, just to be patient with it, and had a great weight on it. You know, I think the only reason he's taking stick is because he's not Mesut Ozil. I mean, he's not that prime creator, but he does. I mean, I thought really controlled the game well and has a maturity to his game. The tempo, puts in a shift defensively. He's obviously a different player than Ozil, but I mean, it's games like this where I feel like he can really work his socks off. And you know, credit to Bukayo Saka as well for his patience. I mean, you can just see the spacing, the timing. They're just waiting and playing at the exact right time, both of them, and just a great finish. And Rio Ferdinand on his podcast mentioned that he talked to Arteta in one of his first games. I mean, asked him, hey, tell me about this Martinelli guy. He's like, oh, I really like him. He's going to really be something. And compared to him to Luis Suarez. And I really thought about that today, and I can really see more of that in him. So we'll be interested to see him continue to develop. But man, what a player he was, and what a way to start that game. I mean, he's, you look at Saka last year, took on the bulk of the goal scoring weight, and it was all him. And now to have Jesus and Martinelli has, I think, even gotten even a different side of Saka coming out. I mean, I think Martinelli's enhanced by Tomiyasu behind him, giving him all the space. I mean, he's not bombing up like Tierney. He's staying in a different space. And I think that gives him a lot of room. And then Xhaka finding, you know, giving him the defensive side as well, I think has really freed Martinelli up. Not that he doesn't put a shift in, but that whole left side was really, really solid.
Where were you celebrating this first goal?
I was very close to the TV right here and had my daughter on my lap, and I had to set her down, and was off running about the
house.
Did
you sit her down, or did you kind of
I did sit her down and ran back and picked her up. She, you know, she's only two. She didn't exactly know what was going on, but had to make sure she knew it was a good thing. So
I was just telling the guys before we came on is that I've got a couple of Liverpool supporters in the street, and they're not too shy about when they have a good win. So they put all their flags up and all that sort of thing and parade around in their stuff. And when that goal went in, I just burst. I just jumped up and went, yes! And then opened the window and went, damn it! So they knew we were there. Trent Alexander-Arnold looked dreadful, didn't he, Paul? He was really run ragged, and he must have been relieved to get an injury against Martinelli.
Well, I think when we spoke last week, Tom, you know, I think I point out that, you know, he's very good going forward. I think he was involved in Liverpool's equaliser, but as a defender, he can't defend. He doesn't read danger. He doesn't position himself correctly. He gets turned around far too often. He's often in the wrong area at the wrong time. You know, he left Saka almost completely unmarked for the second goal. Yeah, I've never quite understood all the adulation that Trent Alexander-Arnold gets from the media in particular. I mean, some of the mainstream press, they absolutely adore the guy. So he's the best player ever to wear the England shirt. As I accept he's good going forward, but, you know, as you mentioned Tomiyasu before, when you're a defender, your key role is to defend. Your key role is to stop the opposition scoring. And that's what Tomiyasu did perfectly. Did so well on Sunday, marking Salah out of the game. Trent Alexander-Arnold doesn't do that. I'm actually disappointed he's injured, because I was kind of hoping he'd be fit for the rest of the season, because I think Liverpool's defence might actually improve with him not being there. But yeah, he was tormented from start to finish. I think it was a relief for him to go for half-time. I think the injury also as well gave Klopp a convenient excuse to withdraw him from the play without it being obvious that he'd been withdrawn because of such a poor, shoddy defensive performance. And you do kind of wonder where his career is going, because on his recent league showings, he's not going to be picked for the starting 11 in Qatar for England. He might not even make the squad. So it's, you know, to this injury now. So yeah, a very poor performance, but it helped Arsenal's victory. So who's complaining?
Yeah, exactly. Lauren, the Gabriel handball that was or wasn't, what was your opinion of that? How did you see it?
Could have been given. I think we were a bit lucky, to be completely honest. Given some of the other, I mean, we say this every week, given some of the other calls that we saw this weekend, if he had said, yeah, okay, do you know what? That's a penalty. I don't think we would have had much ground to argue.
Something similar with the Newcastle guy who jumped
up. Yeah, exactly.
Flapped his hand up.
Yeah, no, I think we were lucky, to be honest. But, you know, take a bit of luck every now and again. It's not often we get it our way. So yeah, hands up, it was a bit lucky. Yeah.
I tell you what, though, I've watched that probably about six or seven times now, as you do, and the whole match as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. It looked to me, seeing him front on, it looked like he clipped his chest, then clipped his arm. Mm. And I also think with this whole handball thing, we have to be really clear, all this proximity of the arm, you know, it's slide ball bollocks, isn't it? Mm. You know, who wants to get a couple of scientists in and all the rest of it, sort of close examination of these things? If it's handball, it's fairly obvious, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy jumping up when he clips that ball, he had no idea where that ball was. He just, as you jump, you raise your arms, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. So I think they need to, exactly, this whole how close the arms are. If it touches the arm, it's either handball or not. I think that's the only way they're going to do it, to get rid of this subjective. And look, it's not always going to be fair. Of course, it's not always going to be fair. There's going to be times that it doesn't, or, you know, it was an accident or it wasn't. But it's in the hands of the referee now to decide on how they see it and how they feel, which also isn't fair. So there needs to be a better solution going forward, I think personally. Am I complaining? No, absolutely not. We got off the hook on that one. Fine. But I think, you know, if it had been roles reversed, we would not have been happy. So it's a tough one.
Guys, we're just going to go round for your opinions on this close proximity thing. Nick, what do you make of it? I think it's a load of... What was that?
My dog.
Oh, have you got burglars?
What do you think of it?
Hey, it's live. It's got burglars. Call the cops.
He's obviously not a fan of the proximity. Sorry.
Yeah, this close proximity thing, it's... in the day, Paul will back me up on this, back in the day, if it was handball, it was really bloody obvious. I can't deal with it. It does my head in.
Yeah, no, now they, I mean, if they're... Yeah, right. That's how my household feels on it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be, like Lauren said, eventually it's going to be black and white, did it hit the hand or not? And you have to, to move your body, you have to use your arms, and so that just makes it such an interesting call. Yeah, I think the thing that saved Gabrielle was the chest, and that it wasn't a shot. I think if that was a shot, I think he's done there.
In the frame as well, Nick, you see him trying to keep his arm down. You know, you can see him trying to awkwardly keep that arm down. It just doesn't, because it's not normal behavior, you know, not when you're trying to defend.
Right. I don't know the solution for sure. I think you can justify it a lot either way. I felt like if we had that given, I would have felt like we would have been gifted that. Yeah, I don't know.
As Lauren says, we've been on the sticky wicket with these VARs before, so we're entitled to one. But I really do believe it wasn't a handball, because it hits his chest. Play it back. You're watching this, and then you've got the match recorded. Go back, isolate that incident, and then you will see it looks like it comes up, clips him on the chest, then hits him on the arm. But the arm is just incidental. Paul, give us your version, sir.
Well, I'd agree with the comments, you know, Lauren and Nick have made there, and what you said at the start as well, Tom. I mean, one thing that frustrates me now is when you look at defenders trying to defend their area, they're consistently now trying to defend with their hands behind the back so the ball doesn't hit them. And that never used to happen. And key skill of defending is being able to, you know, manoeuvre your arms to get yourself into a better body shape to defend an attack on your side. So I think it's impacted in that way. I mean, you've heard back to the pre-Premier League days there, Tom, and it had to be a blazing handball for the penalty to be given. You know, certainly like in the 70s and 80s, The Gabriel incident would not even be considered for a penalty, because his arms were too close to his body when the ball hits him. It's a really, you know, it doesn't help that FIFA keeps changing the guidelines for what is a handball, what isn't a handball, season after season, which doesn't help the clarity. Also, I think it's just, I'm always kind of of the opinion that if you think the defender is seeking to gain an advantage by using his hands, and I know that's judgmental, but to me, it's a guideline to follow. If you think the action is being to deliberately prevent an attacker from, you know, delivering a shot on target, then that's a penalty. But in the case on Sunday, there was no way that Gabriel was intentionally trying to stop the ball. It just hits him. Now, no, in my view, no, because penalties are so important in games and can really change the balance and the tempo of a match, it's such a key decision that it's got to be 100%, you know, the referee has to be 100% convinced that it's a deliberate attempt for your side to gain the advantage. And if it's not, I'm just happy to play it on, because I don't like seeing matches decided by a dodgy handball penalty decision. It's not in the spirit of the game for me.
Well, as well, if you look down the bottom end, you get some of those decisions when you're struggling for points and you're stuck in the mire. You're not going to be too happy with that flimmy, flammy stuff that they try to explain away with Dermot Gallagher today.
Yes.
Oh, it's me. There's no J, so I'm going to have an email. Well, it's actually my antivirus. I don't know what that's about. We'll get rid of that. Anyway, we'll move on from there. That's obviously a bone of contention that will go on for many, many months. And there'll be a repetition of this in many, many games, probably this weekend. So, great save from Ramsdale, has to be said.
Nunes replied after 34 minutes with a right side of Arsenal's defence kind of caught napping, even though we said Tomiyasu was outstanding. Liverpool, with their quality, they broke through. Gabriel did have a weaker game for me, but that's not to say that we should cast him aside or flog him off, like some are saying. Lauren, the Gabriel thing, it's you're entitled to a bad game. And let's say that he had a couple of incidents in this game that were a bit questionable. He's up against Liverpool. They're hardly a tosh side, are they?
No, absolutely.
They're hardly Yeovil. Sorry, Yeovil people.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, I watch back the two Liverpool goals, but I look back and to be honest, like, even if Gabriel got a touch, I don't think there's much they could have done. Maybe it wouldn't have gone the way it went, but, you know, the two touches, the Diaz's pass to Nunes and Nunes's finish were really, really good. They were really top quality. It's hard to isolate that one incident and say, you know, this is where it went wrong. It's a bit unfair, I think. It could have very, very easily been Nunes firing it over and we would have overlooked the whole incident and forgot about it completely. Yeah, Gabriel did have a bit of a weaker game, but, and I feel like we are saying this every so often, but he's up, he's playing right beside Saliba, who was arguably the defender of the season. Okay. He's got a lot to contend with there beside him. He has to look good. And if he's having one or two mistakes, which he always is able to correct within the game, and he's always able to, I suppose, right the wrongs that he does make, it's a bit harsh. And I think a lot of people are being very, very critical. It's like they just can't enjoy when we're going well. They need to find that one thing that's the weak spot, you know?
Yeah, I've got a nitpick. But the thing as well, anyone who's played the game, if you're actually running towards your own goal and that ball comes over the top, it's really hard to deal with.
Absolutely.
You know, you're looking to the skies, you're waiting for it to drop, you're seeing where it drops, what you can do with it. And the other guy's doing the same. But obviously, if he's a bit quicker, he's in there. And he was. It was, mind you, Nick, what was all that about? It's the most unusual, shittest celebration I've ever seen. What the hell?
Yeah, he thinks he's that guy and he's not that guy. I mean, it was interesting. You know, he was celebrating, did that multiple times. Kept smiling. I'm thinking he's definitely the new guy because this team's been there before and this is not enough for them. And you could tell just how happy he was and just thought it was really interesting. Great goal. Took it really well. But
he's one of those guys that get on Paul's nerves. Like you said before, you've been there 30 minutes, you're kissing the badge, giving it all that and, you know, whooping it up. It's incredible. Jamie O'Hara said, I still think about Gabriel, by the way. I still think that you can get at them with the back four. Gabriel, for me, is clumsy and has mistakes in him. Liverpool should have had a stonewall penalty yesterday where it hit him on the arm. But as a team, they're solid, really complete, playing with confidence. It's horrible to watch. Well, it would be, wouldn't it? You're a Tottenham guy, so suck it up. From that point of the equaliser, I felt kind of Liverpool managed to somehow slow the game down to suit their game instead of us, because we were rushing forward. We were intense, really bringing it with speed and movement and all the rest of it. And then it somehow managed to get a foothold back in it, Paul. It was an unnerving sort of 15, 20 minutes for us.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite anxious for you because I definitely felt that after the equaliser, Liverpool were definitely starting to impose themselves more on the game. They had more possession. They were denying Arsenal space, time and opportunity. And I think we said in this show before that Arsenal attack-wise are the best when they burst with pace, when they attack the back four, when they split the defenders, make the passes and create the opportunities. Both the first two goals came from pace. So I wasn't expecting Arsenal to score before at a half-time interval. But the speed and pace...
Was I.
Well, I don't think anyone on the stage was particularly, because at that time it looked to Arsenal were desperate for the half-time whistle to come so Arteta could calm down and get them reorganised. But you watch that goal again, and it's the movements, the quality of the passing, the delivery, and It looks an easy tap in for Saka, but the guy's run about 70 yards to get there ahead of any defenders. And he's run there in anticipation that the ball is going to arrive, because I've seen many balls in the past who would make a run like that because not expecting the ball to get to the feet. But he was absolutely determined to get there, and he got his reward for it as well. And, you know, I just, the whole movement from start to finish was just, you know, no matter who you support, it was just superb to watch. It had power, it had pace, it had delivery, it had a supreme finish. And what a way to finish the first half, because then the team go off, the crowd's up, you know, in ecstasy. And you could just see, you know, the chests are out, the confidence is back, and they're going into the changing room thinking, no, we're getting pounded for a bit there, but we're ahead, we've got the lead. And you know, that's always the quality of a good team, that you soak up the pressure, and then just when the opponents think they've got you in a tight hole, you break, you score, you go 2-1 up, and it changes the game.
Yeah, it was, I tell you what, you've got to mention that atmosphere as well. It's a hell of a place to go to for any opposition. We must fancy our chances, even if Real Madrid or Barcelona went there at the minute, because it's just a jumping atmosphere. And it doesn't matter what happens either. You know, you get a goal up, yeah, they equalise, and it's still the same atmosphere. Nick, talk us through that Martinelli run. I mean, the goal was brilliant. The first goal was brilliant. But when he took that ball on and did that run down that left-hand side, that was something else. And then he stops in the box, looks up, picks the pass. Incredible.
Yeah, the speed at which he stopped at was quite unbelievable. Kiese was going at such great pace. I'll even back up even further to Jesus evading pressure to release Martinelli. You know, we saw that great assist he had against Bodo Glimt going down the touchline. And this was a lot different part of the field, but very similar footwork from him just to start that. And, you know, then we're going 3v3 and Big Gabriel is trying to atone for his mistake, and his run was crucial. And yeah, Martinelli stopping on a dime and just sending Trent and Henderson continuing to go, and played a great ball. And Gabriel's dummy, who knew he had that in him? I mean, he's Brazilian, so I guess it's in the blood. And yeah, like Paul said, I mean, Saka made a huge run and needs to keep gambling like that to get those easier, looks easy, but he barely got there. I mean, watching it again, he really had to stretch and he barely got anything on it. And yeah, what an incredible goal at such a crucial time. And we were riding the wave a little bit, and to get to that point up at that, just a great goal. Just both goals are just such goals that the stadium can get so excited about, and really shows you just the attacking threat that we have, even maybe when we're up against it a little bit.
In that point, there were four white shirts in the box and another three getting into the box when that ball went in. Let's go to Lauren. Lauren, England are playing Czech Republic tonight. Have you got one eyeball on it? Are you?
I do indeed. I feel a bit like the Sky Sports setup here. I have about four different screens open. yeah, so it's 0-0 in that game. England, Czech Republic, Ireland are playing Scotland in the World Cup qualifier. 0-0 there as well. I watched the first half just before starting this, and Ireland scored from a throw-in, directly from a throw-in. Wasn't allowed because apparently it has to go off a scorable part of the body. Never knew that. Apart from that, nothing really much else happening in the women's today. Yeah, we have a bit of a break. Kind of been enjoying it, to be honest. There's a lot of football coming up. I'm trying to get my bearings, you know.
Well, but keep an eye on that game for us.
Absolutely.
And if anything,
yeah.
Anything develops, just go, oh!
Of course.
And then we just go, something's happened.
Absolutely. I think one thing actually worth mentioning is Spain bet the US today 2-0.
Oh.
Yeah. So, especially given everything that's gone on with the Spanish national
team. Is that allowed?
Yeah.
Is that legal?
apparently. Two losses in a row.
He's done by the Spanish.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Right, let's get back to the Liverpool game temporarily. Firmino comes on, and it's typical, isn't it, Firmino? He's just one of those players that likes a bit of the old Arsenal. 53 minutes. Ramsdale, for me, a little bit flat, a little bit late going down, but it was what could you do about that? I mean, that ball went through and he was on it like a car bonnet, and all of a sudden you just knew it was going to go in, didn't you, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think from an Arsenal point of view, it was quite poor defensive work. I think one pass takes about four or five defenders out of the game.
Yeah, very shoddy.
Yeah, Firmino is in on goal, and yeah, I can accept the point about maybe Ramsdale could have narrowed the angle a bit more, maybe could have got a stronger hand to it. But
I'm being picky, but yeah.
But these are the standards you assess now when you're top of the table. You're looking at every little detail thing. Well, how can we improve? Because you know, eventually, if you keep making mistakes like that, it's going to cost you. And that stays the game. You know, I think because Arsenal had the bounce of going 2-0 before half time. So you hope to maintain that in the second half. So I just thought, defensively, it was quite a poor goal to give away. You know, a couple of people switched off. The ball goes through about four players. And before you know it, it's 2-2. It's in the back net. And you're having to pick yourselves up again. But I'm sure in training, that'll be looked at. I'm sure in the drills, they'll be working on ways of improving the defending in situations like that. Because I think, Arsenal are outscoring their opponents in most games at the moment, but conceding two goals at home, defensive solidity is just a bigger part of the game if you're going to stay top of the table at scoring goals.
Absolutely. Aaron Ramsdale will know that he sort of messed up there, and there's no one more critical about Aaron Ramsdale than Aaron Ramsdale. If you haven't seen it, I'm just looking for the connect here. The Joe Cole Cast Episode 6 on YouTube. It's got Aaron Ramsdale. It's a great insight into that lad's mentality. And you can see why Arteta thought he was worth the gamble, because at the time there was a big uproar. Anyway, Jesus penalty for a kick in the calf. But it wasn't. It was the foot, apparently. Thiago went in a bit messily. What did you make of that, Nick? I've got to be honest, I didn't think it was.
I was hopeful that it was called, and the next scene was Oliver pointing to the spot. So that's and because I knew that he called it, there's no way they were going to overturn it, because as they get to that point, there's contact. And if he goes over to the monitor, he can't deny the contact. And it was soft, but we haven't had the rub of the green much over the last couple of years. I've talked at length just how I feel like we have not had things go our way in moments like this. And I'll take it for sure. Once he called it, I knew there was no turning back, and was just interested to see who was going to take it, and was hoping it was Saka. And thankfully, it was.
I think he's that sort of referee as well, with his reputation. No one's going to really argue with him. He's by far and away the best referee in the league.
Jesus, he beat him to the ball, and I know it wasn't much contact, but credit to Jesus making the most out of the contact. We'll take that call for sure.
Lauren, here's my point, right? He's got his back to the goal. He's almost stretching out sideways to get that ball to try and pull it down. He's not in a position to actually, he's at full stretch, he's not in a position to actually turn around and do anything with it. And the ball was further away from him than it was towards him. Mm-hmm. And then he gets clipped. As I say, I love it. We took it. Thanks very much. Cheers. Tenor in the post. But it didn't look like a bang-on penalty, did it?
No. Again, I think, and I don't want to be too, critical, but I think we got very, very lucky this game. Take it. Like, I'm not giving out. We'll take it. Like Nick said, we're never in this position where we're kind of going, oof, that was a close one. It went our way. It was lucky. It was definitely lucky. But I think, it's only a penalty. It's in front of a big crowd. As you mentioned earlier, there was a 3-minute wait.
They call it a home
penalty,
don't they?
Yeah. there was, 3-minute wait while there was all that confusion as well. Saka had a lot to do. Saka had an awful lot to do stepping up to take that penalty. Obviously, we know what happened in the Euros final. I think he scored all his penalties since then, but still, that's a massive weight on a, what is he, 21, 22, on a young lad's shoulder. And he did. And I think, credit where credit's due. That was a very mature performance from him in a massive game. But
very
was
impressive.
It a penalty? I'd be leaning more towards we got lucky again in this situation.
Yeah, you agree with that, Paul, as well, before we move on?
Not entirely. I think
I somehow felt you might be wavering a little bit.
I mean, I'm just amazed that a referee actually had the nerve to give a penalty against Liverpool, because according to the Premier League, so that's not allowed often these days, is it? And but my mind just reflected back to the derby at Anfield last season, when Anthony Gordon was blatantly brought down by a Liverpool defender, and after nothing was given. So the number of penalties Liverpool A have conceded have been blatant. You know, it is way in excess of the decisions that have been given against them. Okay, you could argue it was the most blatant obvious penalty, but no, Jesus, his leg was taken away from him. Now, Thiago didn't need to make that challenge. He didn't need to go anywhere near him. And so he ran the risk of giving the referee a decision to make. And I think I mentioned at the start of the pod, I mean, number of times Salah has fallen over when someone's breathed on his shoulder to win a penalty for Liverpool. So, you know, for Klopp to be his normal outraged self at the end of the game, because for once a referee dared not to give a decision in his favour, I enjoyed every minute of listening to that. So, yeah, I mean, maybe the tide is turning, you know, maybe, you know, because, there's lots of stuff now about the 7-year itch with Jurgen Klopp, isn't it? Like, you know, at Mainz after 7 seasons, things started to go pear-shaped. Same with Dortmund after 7 seasons. So certainly the blue half of Merseyside is certainly hoping that this trend continues, and then, you know, the 7-year curse continues for them, you know, this season as well.
Well, it was quite interesting, because the more interviews he did, the shittier his mood got.
Oh, yeah.
So he started off straight after the match. He was a bit annoyed. And then I saw different sort of versions, because you actually milk the teats of it again, don't you? You squeeze every ounce out of it. And he was getting really arsey. It was like, we got robbed type of thing, without saying it properly. Let's talk about the handbags moment. Henderson, Gabriel, and our boy Xhaka, he got involved. I was like, please go for it. Walk away. Nothing to see here. Apparently, rumours of racism from one of the faces of the FA's Kick It Out campaign. How embarrassing is that? And Henderson, there's a bit on Sky, one of these little boxes that you can go and catch up on it. And this afternoon, I wanted to try and catch up on some of the comments and what it was all about. And Sky had removed it temporarily. I don't know whether that was because the Premier League said, listen, this is prejudicing an investigation that we're doing. But it was very interesting. I wasn't even aware in real time, Nick, that was going on, were you? I just thought it was a little bit of get off me, you trod on my shoelace sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think I caught on soon after the game about the FA looking into that, because it was interesting, because about, I think, 10 minutes later, Oliver ran over and talked to Arteta and Klopp, and I don't know if that's the same scenario or what, but just the timing of it was really interesting, being that much later in the game. I don't know if it was coming to a head or what, but I thought the same thing.
Yeah, because he waves Arteta forward, doesn't he? He wants a word with him, and Arteta comes around, and he was like, you know, care? You know, yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, neither of them really reacted to it. I have no idea what was said, but
talking about getting lip readers in now and all that sort of thing. So
would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, a face of England, and I can't stand Henderson. I was ready for Xhaka to have a right go at him. I don't care what the penalty was. I would have
forgiven him that red card, to be fair, because I can't stand him either.
But it's interesting. I saw one still that has Gabriel. Looks like when he heard something, and you can see, I believe it's Firmino. A fellow Brazilian, he looks like he heard the same thing, and just the look on their faces potentially says it all. So not sure what is going on. Hope justice comes through.
Xhaka doesn't take anything, does he? He doesn't like any injustice or any of that sort of thing with his comrades. He's straight in there. Mm. Lauren, we were talking, I think it was last pod, about Liverpool maybe not realising that they were a bit spent in certain areas. Yeah. It's looking like they could do with two or three, and I don't think the January window is going to solve it for them, is it?
No, I think, you know, it seems to be, there's the great players, they have great individual players, but the team doesn't really seem to be gelling, and whether that's, you know, injuries, it's an aging squad as well. I mean, yeah, Pep, oh my God, sorry, Klopp has been there 7 years now. It's happening again, Tom. Sorry.
That's all right. Every pod.
Every
me.
Pod. Klopp's been there long enough now, and after a while your team does get old. You build the team that you can win with, and unless you're constantly getting ready for, and it sounds, I mean, obviously they're not products, they're people, but unless you have the next replacement in line ready to go, you're going to have a bit of a stagnant phase, let's say, where you're not performing to the best. And going into every competition last season right to the very end, they're absolutely spent, they're exhausted looking. Shorter summer, you know, preparing for the World Cup, as we mentioned before, it's a lot, and it really does seem to be taking its toll on the, not just the starting 11, on the squad in total, which isn't really something we're seeing with other teams. If you look at City, you know, they went as far as, okay, maybe not in the Champions League and such, but they did push right into the very end with Liverpool. Okay, they got in a few new players, they got rid of more players than Liverpool, but there doesn't seem to be any hangover in their squad the same way there is with Liverpool. So I'm starting to wonder, is that just, you know, an excuse or giving them the benefit of the doubt? Or what is it? You know, that kind of way. They do look tired. They do look like it's not really clicking right now, but, you know, it's still very early in the season. You can't really rule Liverpool out for anything. They could definitely come back. And I mean, I think, you know, with that much talent, they have to be getting top four. They have to be getting top four. No?
I was just going to say that. Mm. What's their ambition for this season? They're 14 points off the pace. Mm. But as you, I mean, 14 points, it's not a huge deal, because if you get into a period of the season where it gets a bit sticky, mm. and you're dropping points with either losses or draws, you can soon make that up.
Absolutely. We're
only just skimming the surface. Mm-hmm. Let's do some stats on that. Interesting points. Arsenal 11 shots, Liverpool 8, 7 shots on target for the Gunners, 3 for the Scousers, 44% possession for Arsenal, 56% for Liverpool, 386 passes for Arsenal, 488 for Liverpool, 78% pass accuracy for Arsenal, 80% pass accuracy for Liverpool. Lauren, let's have a little sniff at that, those international matches. Mm-hmm. as we come up to the next bit. What's going on?
Well, Ireland have scored. They scored in the 76th minute. We're now into the
83rd. Was it allowed?
It was allowed this time, thank goodness. Couldn't be put through that again. It was allowed. So as it stands, we will be going to Australia ahead of Scotland. 0-0 still in the England game. Bit surprising, but the team was slightly different. There was no Beth Mead. She was on the bench. It looked like Vigaman was using this as kind of a bit of a teaser to try out a different team, a different formation. So, I mean, 0-0 is probably a bit surprising, but as long as the winning streak isn't broken, you know.
Right, let's go to the WSL then. England versus the USA. That's me again. What's going on with this antivirus? Jay's sabotaged my computer.
Jay's emailing you.
Yeah.
England versus the USA, yeah. Lauren. The game was overshadowed by reports that Sally Yates detailing systematic abuse and misconduct in the National Women's Soccer League. Mm-hmm. Players of both teams held a banner saying protect the players and wore teal armbands. Were you aware of that? Here we go again. Carry on, ignore me, I'm just going to strangle a couple of cables.
I did see it, I saw it come out, but I had to be honest, I didn't look into it prior to the match. It was when the match came, when I saw the armbands, I was thinking, what's that for, the banner? And then I realized what it was. Basically, to summarize very, very briefly, I found this, the best summary I found was from the Washington Post. It said, US soccer failed women's players, report finds as new abuse claims emerge. So basically, Sally Q Yates is actually a legal figure. She's a former attorney, and she did some research in, and she found that some of the game's top coaches were subject of numerous allegations of sexual misconduct, vicious coaching tactics, relentless degrading tirades, manipulation, absolutely, and they just retaliated against those who attempted to come forward. Now, it's horrendous, it's awful, you don't want to hear it, but there's two points that I'd like to bring up towards this. One being that it's similar to the Spanish national team, which we spoke about recently, the women coming out saying, look, we're really unhappy in the situation we're in under this coach. He's being manipulative. He's not putting our mental health at the forefront. So it's very similar to that. The difference here is this is coming from a legal body, a legal investigation into it. So clearly, you know, you can I wouldn't, and I'm sure many people wouldn't, but the Spanish coach, for example, he was very quick to brush off the allegations made against him from the players, where this is a third party who has enough evidence to bring this forward and say, this is the situation. The main point of interest is that the increase in interest in women's football has allowed these players to come out and allowed these reports to be seen and be heard. And it's given a lot of women who may have been in this situation before the confidence, because they know that they're actually being listened to now. It's a bit pulling on the heartstrings, but that's the importance of pushing the women's game and to make sure that they feel respected. And as players, you know, if a men's player came out and said, you know,
I guess, Lauren, when it was lower profile,
absolutely,
it was easy to sweep aside. Now you've got,
exactly,
you know, drawing in crowds of 77,000 and all that malarkey. You've got to highlight it and deal with it.
100%. And there's the interest there. It's not falling on deaf ears. And yeah, that's exactly the point I wanted to make. There's people actually want to know and they want to see what's going on. And the players have that safe space now to come out and say, look, this is actually what's happening. It shouldn't be like this. It shouldn't be like this. And they're being heard. So yeah, it's awful, but it's great to see that it's being dealt with and that it's being addressed as opposed to being swept under and ignored. So yeah.
Right. So going back to the match, the outcome was 2-1 to England. It was European champions versus world champions. It was always going to be tight.
Mm-hmm.
England managed a rare win. What did you make of the performance? It was a fairly nip and tuck kind of match, wasn't it? And we'll get to the goal in a minute. But yeah, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. England looked slightly different to how we've seen them before, especially with Leah Williamson missing. She picked up an injury before the international break. She was seen at the match with crutches, which isn't a great sign considering our other centre-back, Rafaela, is also out injured with a foot fracture. Not really what you want to see coming in as an Arsenal fan, of course, coming into a run of very difficult games, game after game, similar to the men's. It's Europe and then league on the weekend. Not great. But in saying that, I thought England looked very, very, very good. Their front three, it was Hemp of City, Kelly also of City, and Beth Mead, of course. Very fluid. Now that White has retired, Ellen White, she was always a focal point. She, the Harry Kane role, if you will. She was the one up top. Now it's a bit more fluid. And I know I have to say it, sorry. Make the connection, you know. It's a bit more fluid. Mead was cutting in a lot. And yeah, it was really enjoyable to watch. I think it was a good game overall. I enjoyed it as a neutral, seeing really, really good quality football being played.
That Lauren Hemp goal, I'll just give that a mention because I had to watch it again today just to appreciate it fully. Beth Mead out on the right slices it in. She has to do a bit of work to tuck it away, but it was an immense, as you say, the movement was amazing. Great goal.
Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed it. I thought she played very, very well. I'd say she's probably looking for a move away from City given the situation there. After selling a lot of their best players, she should be playing European football. She's at that standard. So it's going to be a big season for her, for sure.
The US were denied a couple of things, weren't they? A couple of goals. One was ruled offside, wasn't it? I don't know what the other one was now. I've forgotten. we're not perfect here. What did you expect?
There's so much football. I just can't keep up. yeah, the offside rule, that was horrendous. That was very, very harsh. I mean, it seems like we're talking about this every week, guys, but VAR again, they went back and the player was slightly offside in the lead up. But I mean, there were drawn lines all around the place, like Crayola. They seemed to be making it up themselves.
I watched it a couple of times. I couldn't see it myself. But
exactly. Yeah. It was ridiculous. I think it would have made a bit more of a game of it had it been 2-2, you know, but yeah, that's modern day football, I suppose, in the VAR age.
Yep. Let's do the stats. 11 shots for England, 10 for the US, 4 shots on target for England, 2 for the US, 69% possession for us, 31% for them, 618 passes for us, 264 for them, 86% pass accuracy for us, 70% for them. Mm-hmm. And it just tells the whole story. It's really, really tight. Beth Mead has been voted 2021-22 England player of the year. Well deserved, isn't it? Up against quite a fierce sort of selection. Leah Williamson, Kiera Walsh.
Yeah, I think, you know, after the summer that all these girls had, I think any of them would have been, you know, rightful winners or deserving winners. But you have to give it to Beth Mead. I mean, what she did in English Earth this summer was exceptional. She's gone well for them. I personally really enjoyed seeing Saka and her pick up
it's all going for us, isn't
it?
It's
great, isn't it?
We're just getting the balls left, right and centre. We don't even care what they're for.
Absolutely. You
know, the best colour of car outside in the car park. We're getting that as well.
So we'll take it all. We'll take it all. I thought it was great. Williamson too, coming up second as the captain. Fantastic to see. But yeah, no, all great all around. So can't complain there.
Right, up next for the girls, it's Reading away, 16th yes. of October. It's on Sky Sports. Okay, mm-hmm. Not the feed, it's on Sky Sports viewers. So get in there and have a look. Must also mention The Future of Women's Football with Alex Scott on the BBC. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It is something else. They're outside the Nou Camp, and the sort of expansion of the game is absolutely crystal clear. Right then, Bodo Glimt. I'm having trouble saying that. Ben Affleck was the nickname that Dave gave to Nick, and he said that Bodo Glimt sounded like someone off Star Wars. So I thought that was quite a good one. Paul, a draw will do us, won't it? You know, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good chance to experiment. A lot of mention there about, you know, Sarah Wiegman experiment with the England team in tonight's international. I think it's a good chance for Arteta to look at a few different possibilities, because I think no matter what team Arsenal put out, at the very least, they're going to get a draw no matter what team they put out. So I think it's a good opportunity to see, you know, I think Nketiah, a good chance to definitely give him a full 90 minutes to see how he shapes up. Maybe a chance of being turning back in and left back again. So, yeah, I was just as a free hit, really, because no matter, you know, there's no way they're going to lose that game. So experiment a little bit, try a few different things out. And then, you know, given you've got a tough game on Sunday against Leeds, you'd be very worried about putting your strongest team against Bodo Glimt. So, yeah, I would just use it as an opportunity to see the game through. I don't see why Arsenal can't win that match, but if it's a draw, so be it.
Yeah, did you actually catch the... Because we, podcast family, I do apologise. We didn't get a chance to comment on the first game, so we're going to do that now for you, wrap that up. Did you see the first game, Paul?
No, I didn't, no.
Oh, bloody hell. That link's failed. Lauren, what's happening your end? see if another link fails.
No, England finished up here 0-0. Fine, whatever. Friendly, unbeaten streak continues. We're into the 93rd minute here in the Ireland-Scotland game. Still 1-0, so 3 more minutes to hold out and we might be joining you in Australia. But I did watch the Bodo Glimt game last week and it was... The first 20 minutes were good, I think. I remember texting.
We still love you, Paul.
Thank you. I'm feeling it.
I remember texting my friend and I was just going, like, we're really good. We're really good. And I don't know why I had any doubts. It was Bodo Glimt, but sure, look. I thought it was a good game. I thought, you know, it was perfect for Europa League. I was surprised to see, I'm trying to think who it was now. Was it Xhaka and Martinelli who played the full game? Or they started anyway, they played a lot of it, which I was quite surprised to see given the, you know, the magnitude of the...
Don't ask me technical questions. I can't remember the score.
I know, it's so far away. I can't remember now. But given the, I suppose, bookends of the matches we had either weekend, Spurs and Liverpool, I was surprised to see them both start. But, you know, given their performances on the weekend, it didn't seem to affect them at all. So... You know, it gave us a nice cushion going into this week. Going into this week, the away game. But you'd be expecting a win again, I think.
Well, there's some real highlights. Myself and Nick were gloating about it on his podcast and we were walking through it. There were some highlights. The Kieran Tierney, 23rd minute, Kieran Tierney thunders off the post and Eddie Nketiah rifles it in. Exquisite sort of skill for a striker. I know he's a striker, obviously. But he's still got to take that. It's coming at 90 miles an hour, Nick.
Yeah, he has a way of finding the ball in the box. It's. I mean, eventually, if it happens so much, you have to recognize, okay, yeah, somebody's doing something right. And had to react well to that. And he just has a knack of scoring from that range. And that's that's his game, and he's expanded upon it and become more dimensional. So yeah, well taken, Gordon.
Let's talk about Vieira, phase two, Vieira. We got the song polished and re-lyriced. We don't waste anything at Arsenal. Nick, what was your opinion about Mr. Vieira? We'll come to you in a minute, Lauren. Paul, we're not coming to you.
I'm going to get a coffee. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I really like him. And I was interested to see Odegaard come in the second half and think, is there a way they can both play? Developed, but he is just so – he adds something I don't think anybody on this team has, just a fully creative presence in the midfield, whereas Odegaard's more of a complete player. Xhaka is kind of box-to-box, and Partey being the deep liar. Now we have somebody who really has a knack for goal. He had that shot quite early in the game. I thought he should have scored it, but again, getting in that position. I think he had 4 shots total on the game, including his goal towards the end. And he's just, he has a goal hungry bone in him. And that is definitely really shining out in his limited participation this season already.
Lauren, there was no better example of the combination of Jesus and Vieira in the 84th minute. Jesus, he's got magic feet, hasn't he?
That was exceptional, wasn't it?
It's like his hip bones and his legs don't know they're connected. They just sort of flop about and he manages to take the ball. There was a lovely interchange between feet before he delivered that peach pass into Vieira. Mm-hmm. What are you making of Vieira?
Love him. I really want to see more of him, especially in the Premier League. I mean, it was a B team, wasn't it? Was it Bournemouth? Was it Brentford? Can't remember who it was. One of the B teams.
I saw that lark again.
Whoever he scored against.
I haven't got the energy.
I saw actually, it was on Friday night. It's Brighton and Brentford or Brighton and Bournemouth, whoever it is. I just got so confused. I thought, I'm not watching that one. But yeah, no, I want to see more of him. I really want to see more of him in the Premier League. I think he's exceptional. As Nick said, he's adding so much, you know, it's another dimension and you know, I think, given the way Arsenal play, we are a bit predictable. And we've seen that in games. People can cut off Martinelli, people can cut off Saka, and we struggle to create those chances in some games. So to have another, I suppose, outlet, another creative person in the middle there, it opens up a world of opportunities, and I'm excited. His finish was exceptional. Obviously, I think Jesus got all the credit for that goal, rightly so. I can't remember seeing an Arsenal player dribble like that in a long time. You know, it was exciting. It was really, really good. But Martinelli, doing it again. Vieira, they're always together. It's so confusing. Vieira's finish, really, really good. He could have tapped it in, but he drilled it into the top of the net. And yeah, it was a great finish.
Paul, he went completely under the radar during the transfer window. Had you heard of him? None of us had. I mean, I told Nick on the podcast that after about 4 hours, I said, I've been a fan for that long, you know, because I'd never seen him, never had a mention of him. Have you managed to see him this season?
No, I haven't really. I mean, obviously,
what's going on down Merseyside? What's happening down there? All your power off.
So I can't really add any insights into this debate, to be honest.
Well, we'll pick your brains for the Leeds match because that's the next one up. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Because new manager, they seem to have lost a lot of impetus as well, with a few players disappearing for one reason or another. What's your thoughts on it, Paul? What way are we heading with that one?
Yeah, it's another, you know, really fascinating challenge for Arsenal because I think, you know, Leeds at Elland Road are a tough team to play against. I think that it's a very, we talked about the crowd before, didn't we, at Arsenal. It's the same, at least the crowd really, really passionate there. Now, we drew there early on the season, 2-1, one each. And once again, we possibly were the best team, but they got back into the match, the crowd got behind them, and then they managed to seal the point. Now, I think they've got single players on the team. young forward called Joe Gelhaas, who's a really exciting prospect. Actually went to school about 1 mile from where I live here in Crosby in Liverpool. Really good footballer. He's about 18, 19. So he's one to watch out for. Sinisterra, I've been really impressed with what I've seen him playing for Leeds this season as well. I think up front, I don't quite know how fit Bamford is at the moment, but a fully fit Bamford is also a threat as well. I don't know if you watched the game against Crystal Palace on Sunday before the Arsenal game, but I think defensively, they're quite weak. So I think once again, if it's the typical Arsenal tactics that have been used to great success in the way of hitting the team on the break at the start and putting them under pressure, grabbing the early goal, then I think Arsenal are quite set up to go on and win the game. However, if Leeds were to get the early goal, if Leeds were to contain Arsenal, then it's going to be a really difficult challenge. And it's a really good measure of where the team is, because after the highs of winning the North London derby, the highs of beating Liverpool, this is the moment to keep that run going, to keep the belief going, because now with 8 wins out of 9, I think you're now at the stage where you think a draw of Leeds is 2 points dropped. I think you go there thinking that you've got to win to get the 3 points, because you have to work on the basis Man City aren't going to drop too many points between now and the end of the season. And if Arsenal want to be challenged for a top two position, then this is the type of fixture that you look at and think, you know, this has to be 3 points. Now, I know Leeds haven't won any of their last 5 league games, so that kind of gives some hope. I know the manager a bit eccentric, to say the least, and you might have a view on that, Nick. They're not the team they were under Bielsa. I mean, some of the Football League players under Bielsa was fantastic to watch. They haven't quite got that same quality. They lost, you know, Rafinha as well. They've lost one or two key players there. But either way, they're always going to be a difficult team to beat. They're a strong team at home. Plus, you know, it's a type of match that also has to be going into that game thinking, we can win this, we can get the 3 points, and just put a marker down, you know, put the pressure on Man City, because, you know, if you're winning your games and you're putting the pressure on City to win their games as well, which situation you have to be in. But I would expect Arsenal to win that game, definitely.
Yeah, Jesse Marsh has come into a difficult situation, hasn't he, Nick? I mean, it's kind of typical of some of these clubs. They come up, they establish themselves, things are going well. And as Paul said, the football was exceptional. If I wasn't watching Arsenal, I was half tempted to watch Leeds, because it was an exciting sort of roller coaster, 4-3 win, 5-2 loss. He's had his work cut out there to get anywhere. And where are they sitting? 14th. I've got a screen. Hey, we're going up in the world. I've got a screen. What do you make of it all, Nick?
Yeah, I think the transition from Bielsa to Marsh, I mean, that's just such a distinct style, taking years and years and years to ingrain, which he had, and to get these players to do different things, I think is really hard. And I think it will take a long time. I think he had players specific to his system. I mean, just like what we saw with Emery transitioning to Arteta, I mean, he wanted a specific type of player. So, I think losing Stuart Dallas was a big loss. I mean, he was kind of their Swiss Army knife, broken leg. I think that was towards the end of last season.
Yeah,
big loss for them. I really liked him as a player. I think Brendan Aaronson, you know, a fellow American, has done really well there. But I think I think he's perfect for them and their fans. But I think he's kind of a mid-table Premier League player, which is a good spot for them. I can't see them. I don't know what it's going to take for them to get over the hump. I mean, they were in that huge relegation battle last year, which I couldn't believe how fast that came after they really looked like they were going to establish themselves back in the league. So, yeah, Marsh has a job on his hand. I mean, he's had really bad luck with injuries. You look at Bamford and then Rodrigo. It's like, okay, who's going to score a goal for us? And, I mean, you can go down the line. It's just been a lot of important guys out. Selling Calvin Phillips was a big loss. Your fulcrum in the midfield.
Were you surprised they didn't actually shore up the thing in the summer, Nick? They didn't spend a few quid, because they got a few quid, haven't they?
Yeah, they got Aaronson. They got Sinisterra. They got the left back, the Scandinavian. I can't think of
all right, they bought more than I thought. But, you know, they weren't marquee signings, were they?
Right.
They were
right, I mean,
under the radar.
I mean, if I'm rebuilding a team, I'm going center back and then midfield. And they just kind of bought around that and expecting it to get better. So, yeah, he's got a job on his hands for sure.
Lauren, before before we ask you for another. Is it all done yet? Are we all done? Are we all clear? Right,
all
okay.
Done.
Right, okay.
We'll be joining you in Australia next summer.
Fantastic. Get your shrimps on the barbie. Get ready. And your hats with corks on, all that malarkey. Lauren, what's your feelings about this game coming up? Give us a prediction as well, because I know you like those.
Okay. Thank you for picking me first for predictions, by the way. I think mine have been so wildly off because I'm always third or fourth to
swim it around a little bit.
No, I'm feeling confident. I'm feeling very confident. I think, you know, we are coming into that run of very hectic games now, and, you know, tiredness might start to creep in. But given the momentum, I think this should be a game we're winning. If we're really serious about contending, it should be a game we're winning. We've won these sorts of games already this season. There's no reason not to believe that we can go on and win this. I'm confident in a win. Let's go 2-0.
2-0?
Yeah.
Paul?
Yeah, I'll go for Arsenal to win 2-1.
2-1. Nick?
I was also going to go 2-0, and I'm going to stick with that. We seem to defend better on the road, and we seem to leak a lot of goals at home, so hopefully that continues. Like Lauren said, if we want to prove anything, if we want to back our Tottenham and Liverpool results, we have to do that with a result away at Leeds.
Right, I'm gonna go to my mystic egg box because I've called it twice: North London Derby 3-1, and obviously the Liverpool game. And I'm going to go for 3-0. Mm-hmm. I think we're just going to turn the screws. I don't think they can cope with the Sackers and the Martinellis and all that malarkey. Thanks, guys. Been lovely to see you all again. And hopefully I'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Thanks for a good pod.
Thanks. See you guys.
And thank you, podcast listeners as well, and viewers, because it's been exceptional. Comments and everything else. We didn't get time this week to read anything out, but we will next week. Thank you. See you later, guys.
1-2, 1-2. Is it working? Right, here we go. Aaron Ramsdale, he's the man between the sticks. Aaron Ramsdale, he made all those fans look dicks who said he wasn't worth a penny. He wasn't worth a bean. He could be the greatest keeper that the Arsenal's ever seen. Aaron Ramsdale.
Should we talk football food? Yeah, why not? Although there have been improvements to the quality of food served at football matches, some clubs just haven't caught on. You can purchase anemic hot dogs that look like they've been cooked on the back of a radiator in some sort of backroom office, or not cooked at all, Derby County. Bangers and mash, surrounded by a bizarre orange sticky fluid, Tranmere. Burnt pizzas, West Brom. And carbonised pies and burgers that look carcinogenic at the mere touch, Sheffield United. Birmingham City are the proud owners of the worst looking dish on sale at a football ground, according to us, because we've got evidence. We've been sent a picture of cheesy chips, approximately 30 well-fried tanned chips. That's not a problem. But with a slice of burger cheese, that plastic looking stuff flung on top for £4. You ought to be ashamed of yourselves. That's not cheesy chips, not even melted. Leeds United are a club that are proud of their scorched menu, offering burnt burgers and charred meat to hardy Yorkshire folk with robust teeth and a strong stomach. No prices on those. However, Merthyr Town FC do a lovely looking sausage and chips with curry sauce in a cob. We started licking our lips immediately when we saw that, didn't we, Dave? No price on that one, but I'd happily part with £8, wouldn't you? Burger and chips at Chelsea is £11.95, at Arsenal it's £12.80, and even Reading sell their pork baguettes at £8. A double cheeseburger and chips at Arsenal will set you back £18.05. That's a combination of articles, Amp at theguardian.com, Tom Sibley at Football Scran, and goal.com. My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Bald Gooner. You can cozy up with Connor at ConnorJack2 on the Twitterverse, and Paul is at PMacCap. Look up Lauren on LaurenD2710. The podcast is on every social media outlet, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon DC of Let's Be Arsenal FC, which is twin to the podcast. Also check out arsedevils.com for opinion and news on all things Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal thing for at gmail.com. A big thanks to all of you who support us, whether you listen or watch. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this: North London is most certainly red.
It was a rainy night, the night the king went down. Everybody was crying, seemed like sadness had surrounded the town. Me, I went to the liquor store, and I bought a bottle of wine and a bottle of gin. I played his records all night, drinking with a close, close friend. Now some people say that that ain't right,
that ain't right.
And some people say nothing at all,
I say nothing.
But even in the darkest of night, you can always hear the king call. You can always hear the king call. Well, they put him away in Memphis, 6 feet beneath the clay. Everybody was crying, everybody said it was a plain gray day. Me, I went to the liquor store, and I bought another bottle of wine and another bottle of gin. I played his records all night, and I got drunk all over again. Now some people say that that ain't right,
that ain't right.
Some people say nothing at all,
I say nothing.
But even in the darkest of night, you can always hear the king call. You can always hear the king call.
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight.
The stage is bare, and I'm standing here.